From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. Your house is just a place for your stuff.
It's the American dream, right? Get a bigger house, a bigger yard. It's what fueled the building of America's suburbs. But the soaring price of gasoline is now forcing a change in our thinking. And some are calling for a renewed urbanism with a model coming from an unlikely source.
Tijuana in the last decades has been incrementally building itself with the waste of San Diego and of Southern California.
On today's program, we explore the future of a changing America and the psychedelic Latin-infused Afro beat of Ocote Soul Sounds. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Maria Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hola, Maria Elena.
Hi, Maria.
Okay, well, everyone in the Latino community who is interested in politics was talking about the news that Senator Barack Obama recruited Patty Solis Doyle. She was a longtime campaign manager for Senator Hillary Clinton. He has recruited her as chief of staff to his yet-to-be-named vice presidential running mate. So what does Senator Obama hope to gain from the Solis Doyle appointment, and what do you think it means in terms of the possibility of a Hillary Clinton run?
Well, you know, the first part of the question, Obama's campaign is hoping that Solis Doyle is going to help him with three different voter groups, with women, with Latinos, and with Hillary supporters. Because, you know, she has a great deal of experience, not only having worked in Senator Clinton's campaign, but she also worked with her when she was first lady. They've been very close for many, many years. So she definitely has the context. She has the political know-how. Now, as far as what this means in terms of having Clinton as a possible running mate, that really depends on how you look at it, because there's speculation that Solis Doyle didn't resign the Clinton campaign, but was actually fired. So if that's the case, there could be some, you know, uneasiness there, since, you know, part of her responsibility, like you say, with Obama would be to be chief of staff of the VP nominee. But if there was no bad blood and Solis Doyle is still as close to Clinton as she was before, then it could be part of, you know, these backroom deals, you know, bringing her on board. So either way, Patty Solis Doyle becomes the most important Hispanic in Obama's campaign, and as a former campaign manager for Senator Clinton, that's a big get for Obama, I would say.
And another big get, a lot of people are saying this is a big get, is that Barack Obama was officially endorsed by the United Farm Workers. Their executive board officially endorsed him. So what does this mean? How important is it? Does it happen all the time that the UFW endorses candidates?
Well, yeah, they endorsed Hillary Clinton back in January. They called her the strongest and most experienced candidate for the presidency. But now that Obama's the main guy there, the presumptive Democratic candidate, they've endorsed him. But they didn't use the same words. And I think that, you know, it's interesting because what do you do when you have two candidates from the same party? You endorse one, but you don't want to hurt the other one because you don't know at the beginning of the campaign who's going to be the nominee. So they didn't say the same thing. What they said about Obama is that, you know, since he was the community organizer, he shared the values of the United Farm Workers Union, that he understands the role that they play, you know, in our society and in feeding our nation. So now they say they're going to do everything possible to get him elected because he will be a voice for working class Americans. You know, so we go back kind of, Maria, to the previous conversation we had about whether or not these types of crossover endorsements can do anything for Obama. Because let's remember that Obama in Nevada was endorsed by the very powerful Culinary Workers Union, but he didn't necessarily get the support of the rank and file. So it's going to take some work. You can't just take these things for granted. You know, the only thing that we can say about Hispanics and Obama is that there's been a couple of polls since he became the nominee, and in both of those polls, Obama leads McCain among Latino voters somewhere around 60% to about 23-25% for McCain.
All right, so he's still got his work cut out for him. Let's move on to another subject, which is fascinating for those of us who are always thinking about immigration, because in this case, you have American drivers who are looking for cheap gasoline prices, and where are they going? They're driving south into Tijuana. And this is creating a problem in some of these border cities where they're apparently running out of gas because of all the Americans who want cheap gas.
You know, the gas situation could be a little bit different because now it's causing a shortage of gas at the border. You know, there's been an increase of up to 30% in sales of gasoline and diesel in Mexico. And what's happening is that it's causing dozens of gas stations to run out of gas. You know, they're turning away, some of them are turning away clients, some of them are serving only certain trucking customers, for example. And they are attributing this to the fact that Americans are crossing the border to get cheaper gas. It's almost half of what it costs in the United States. I saw a wire that said that a regular unleaded is about $2.54 a gallon. That's pretty cheap when you think about, you know, how expensive it is. It's, what, over $4 in most of the country. So Mexico is an oil-rich country. The gas stations in Tijuana all receive the gas from Pemex. So there doesn't seem to be a supply problem. The problem seems to be the difficulty in transporting it as quickly as it is needed.
Sounds like we need some new border politics there, Maria Elena.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for speaking with us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Maria. Take care.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. What is most commonly known about Mexico City may not necessarily endear you to visit. Incredible traffic jams, pollution, and tales of crime and corruption have shaped popular opinion. But author and journalist David Lida wants to change all that. In fact, when it comes to Mexico City, the self-proclaimed Inside Outsider asserts that the city today has inadvertently poised itself to become the, quote, capital of the 21st century. The sprawling city is a curious mix of holding on to history while embracing the future. David Lida writes about it in his newest book, First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the Capital of the 21st Century. And David joins us now in New York City, which is a city that in many ways was the capital of the 20th century. Welcome to Latino USA, David.
I'm really happy to be here.
Now, do you actually call yourself a Chilango?
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Do. That's huge. Okay, so for our audience, Chilango, it's a name that used to be kind of an insult.
It still is.
It still is an insult for anybody who lives in Mexico City, but it's also kind of like a badge.
Yeah.
When you say that you're a Chilango, you're basically saying, I come from the biggest city in the world that's like the roughest and toughest and most cosmopolitan in the world. So here's the thing about Mexico for me, because I was born there. I was born in La Colonia Narvarte. And I have these amazing...
Mi vecina,
are we neighbors?
En la calle La Nápoles.
Oh my God, in La Calle Pitágoras, which is Pythagoras Street. That's where we had our home, my family, my mom's family. And my dream was that one day I would really learn how to navigate Mexico City.
It's a very tough thing
And you know
to accomplish.
What? I have to admit that at this stage in my life, I still can't navigate Mexico City. It's too huge, David.
It is. It is. I mean, there are parts I really did my best. You know, you may know that the worst insult that one Mexican writer can say to another is, escribe con las patas. He writes with his feet. In a way, I wrote this book with my feet because I really got around to all sorts of neighborhoods, including the neighborhoods that everybody told me not to go to, Ciudad Neza, El Barrio de Tepito.
Now, David, you have an interesting title for the book. It's First Stop in the New World. And basically, you say, Mexico City, the capital of the 21st century. Why do you see Mexico City as the capital of the next century?
More than half the people in the world today live in cities. And most of those people do not live in neat, orderly cities like New York or Toronto or London or Paris. They live in huge, chaotic cities with more than 10 million people. Mexico City is the closest one to the U.S. It's 4.5 hours from here by plane and 3 hours from L.A. And I believe that if people want to understand what these cities, and, you know, I count among them Shanghai, Mumbai, Sao Paulo, Lagos, Istanbul. I think Mexico City is the one that might be easiest for people from this country or even Europe to understand. A lot of people here already speak Spanish. And it's the one that's closest to our culture. And I think it's emblematic of the way these cities work. We've got, you know, half the population living in the informal economy, many of them selling things on the street. And the way that the economies of these cities works. And that's why I call it the capital of the 21st century.
All right, well, let's talk about the comparisons between the city that you were born in and the city that you now live in versus me, the city that I was born in versus the city that I now live in.
How long have you been in the United
States?
I've
been in the United States almost my whole life. I came when I was about a year and a half old, born in Mexico City. And then as a student, I came to live in New York City. And now New York City is my home. You were born in New York City, and now Mexico City is your home. So make the connection. New York, Mexico City, what other parallels there are there?
Well, Mexico City today reminds me a lot of what New York was like when I was a kid. When I was a kid, New York was a pretty dangerous place. It was a tough, it was the era of, you know, those movies like Fort Apache, the Bronx, and the Warriors. And it had a really bad reputation. And you sort of, you know, again, there was this badge of honor idea that if you lived in New York, you were pretty tough, whether or not it was true. And Mexico City has that kind of rough and tumble reputation now. I would say, at the end of the day, I'm happier to be in Mexico City because there's more calor humano. How do you say that in English?
In fact, that was the question that I was going to bring up, because if you think about Mexico City again in a kind of like, you know, the city of the future, one thing that Mexico City does have is this calor humano, this
people
humanity.
People are a lot nicer to each other.
People are nicer to each other. I wouldn't say that New Yorkers are not necessarily nicer to each other, but I do think that in Mexico City, there's a sense of we're not in a rush, and so if you need my attention or you need my friendship or you need to have that one extra beer or that one extra taco, I'm not in a rush. Whereas in New York City, everybody's in a rush.
Even though Mexico City is this huge, chaotic, bustling city, people do have a different sense of time there. Things take as long as they take.
What do you think the rest of us, those of us who live in El Norte, in the north, in big cities, what do we need to learn from Chilangos, from those of Mexico City?
I think that life is lived day by day, that what happens in the moment might be more important than worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow or next month or next year, that life is precious and maybe more precious. You realize how precious it is, the less that you have, and that moments in life are to be savored rather than thrown away worrying about what's going to happen next.
David Lida is the author of First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the Capital of the 21st Century, published by Riverhead Books. His website is www.davidlida.com. Thanks for joining us, David.
Tijuana Sound Machine.
Well, if Mexico City is your first stop in the New World, Tijuana, which is a city that I lived in for about a year, should probably be your second stop. If you've ever traveled to this city on the U.S.-Mexico border, you've probably noticed that it's peppered with run-down neighborhoods and homes that are often poorly constructed. In some cases, houses are held together with scraps of wood, cardboard, or even old tire treads. But if you take a closer look, you might notice some homes that double as businesses, taco stands, a beauty parlor, or perhaps even an auto body shop. That informal yet efficient use of living space has inspired architect and University of California professor Teddy Cruz to reimagine the future of design for America's neighborhoods. From San Diego, Marcos Najera has our story.
When he works with students at his UCSD design studio, Teddy Cruz constantly questions how immigrants have transformed American neighborhoods, physically and socially. Cruz himself moved to Southern California from Guatemala when he was just 19.
In the early 80s, we migrated, settled in San Diego, not knowing that this was going to become the place really of work and life for me, making sense in terms of these issues.
25 years later, Cruz has uncovered an awkward but fascinating flow in this border region. As new Latino immigrants continuously cross the border to settle in San Diego's suburbs, the suburbs of San Diego send housing material hand-me-downs to Mexico shantytowns.
Tijuana in the last decades has been incrementally building itself with the waste of San Diego and of Southern California. So it's a very dramatic image. You can imagine people going north, waste going southbound across the border. So you see trucks sometimes in the freeway in San Diego filled with garage doors. And when you go into some of these shanty towns, the garage doors are used to build entire houses. So you see houses made of garage doors.
Oftentimes, those homes are propped up on steel braces or stilts to cram parking underneath or perhaps even a small business. While poverty arguably inspires people in Tijuana shanty towns to retrofit their homes using American scrap, Cruz believes the practice is brilliant and it could serve as a new architectural model in the U.S. He's testing his theory here in San Isidro. It's a Latino immigrant community just south of San Diego. Cruz remembers choosing the neighborhood while he was at a friend's barbecue in Tijuana 6 years ago.
Because of friends that I have in Tijuana, there was, you know, one day a barbecue, and it was the typical smell of Tijuana. It's a mixture of smog and tacos, you know.
It was at that barbecue that Cruz met San Isidro activist Andres Corepa.
Yeah, a mí bien.
Scorepa is the president of Casa Familiar, a community service agency in San Isidro. With the input of neighbors, she's helping Cruz design an upscale housing project that mirrors that efficient Tijuana-style use of space.
It's called Living Rooms at the Border.
The project preserves the oldest church in town. A redesign transforms its rectory into new office space for small businesses. The adjacent parking lot will move underground to make way for compact apartments, and the courtyard becomes a mini commerce center where residents can buy, sell, and trade with each other.
You know, if you go into any poor place, any poor community, there are clothes hanging on the street, you know, on the fences, they're thrown in the front yard because everybody has a garage sale every day. And so they would then know, oh, let's go buy a ver qué tienen in the this little swap meet.
While the city of San Diego supports Cruz and Casa Familiar, complicated zoning laws and regulations will keep Living Rooms at the Border at least 2 or 3 years away from breaking ground. Bill Anderson is San Diego's director of city planning.
And one of the problems where you have a custom approach to every single situation is you can't replicate it quickly on a citywide level. It's not necessarily the best formula for providing affordable housing at the volume that's needed to meet the demand.
But Cruz argues that people in poor neighborhoods and immigrant communities like San Isidro refuse to wait for municipalities to examine what does and doesn't work. They simply toss out the rule book, and that's a very good thing in his view.
I mean, it's not to say that that I'm trying to romanticize poverty by observing this. What I'm trying to suggest is that designers and people in my field in terms of architecture, we should again pay attention, but not just to the images. Let's learn from the intelligence on the ground of these neighborhoods. Let's allow these people to be part of the process. Anyone in the city, any citizen could become an architect by appropriating its spaces, by understanding that everything is useful.
Cruz's work will soon reach beyond the southern border. Along with his San Isidro project, Cruz is designing a similar housing model for immigrants in New York's Hudson River Valley. For Latino USA, I'm Marcos Najera in San Diego.
In a minute, the psychedelic, Latin-infused Afrobeat of Ocote Soul sounds. That's the future of music on Latino USA. No se vayan.
Thank you.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Sometimes bad luck can turn out to be a good thing. Don't believe me? Well, just ask Martin Perna. In late 2004, the Brooklyn-based musician and founder of the Antibalas Afrobeat Orchestra set out on a biofueled trip to Mexico. But he didn't quite get that far. Martin Perna broke down in Austin, Texas. And luckily, he was far from stranded because Adrián Quesada, a member of Austin's Grupo Fantasma, took Martin in. Jam sessions over the next few weeks resulted in inspiration for a new album and a new group under the name Ocote Soul Sounds. The chemistry between Martin Perna and Adrián Quesada worked so well that the duo has returned with a new album appropriately named The Alchemist Manifesto. We're joined now by Martin Perna from our studios in Austin, Texas. Welcome to Latino USA, Martin.
Thank you so much, Maria. Good afternoon.
Okay, so for people who need to be in the know, you actually wear a lot of different hats, and you are the founder of a group that we've reported on here. It's called Antibalas. And that's a wild group of how many musicians?
Between 11 and 16, depending on if we're in New York or if we're abroad.
And it's a huge big band, raw, brassy sound with a lot of African mixed up, African rhythms and beats, right?
Very much so.
And then you move to a totally different sound. I think the word texture is really one that applies for the music from this new CD. I mean, there's just a real, you really want to kind of transport your listeners to a space, right? I mean, it really feels like a space. And I'm thinking about the name Ocote, which is from Nahuatl, which is the mother tongue of the Aztec area of Mexico. It also means pine trees. So Ocote, pine trees, transporting to another kind of world out there. Am I on the right track here?
Very much so. The Ocote, one of the things that's magical about the Ocote is that, as you're probably familiar, you can go to a market and buy little bundles of it, and that's the kind of wood that you use to get the fire started, that you use when you're cooking by lumbre with other logs, and the Ocote can even be used to get wet logs or logs that don't want to burn. It can get those logs to burn. So there's this idea of nature, the heartwood of this pine tree catalyzing something, getting the fire started.
Why a Nahuatl word?
A lot of it is our roots to Mexico, to another time, to another way of doing things, and to a way of doing things that people are still doing, but that's getting sort of crushed or swept aside in the steamroller of modern times and modern technology. So with this group, we try to reconcile that. You know, we try to reconcile our past, our origins, with the world that we're in right now. We're living right close to the border. Adrián is from Laredo. And so a lot of these sounds are border sounds. They're in between the space between the modern world, the folkloric world, technology, and root sounds. And we're just trying to make sense of it. So each record that we make is us reconciling this moment in the presence, not trying to deny one or trying to deny the other, but trying to make something that is authentically where we are right at this moment.
One of the things that I like about the CD is that you're also bringing in like these different perspectives. So, for example, the song El Pescador, mm-hmm. you know, you go into this this canto, which you know, one would sing for the orishas or the goddess Yemaya, who is part of the Yoruba or Santeria tradition that comes from West Africa and Cuba. And so you're singing that as part of the song El Pescador, but it's also got, you know, this hip-hop drum beat going on. So talk about how you put that song together and where your passion for Yemaya comes into play.
Well, the fact that the beat underlying it is that, you know, just because we're in a modern era where hip-hop is dominating the airwaves and these big beats underneath, that we can't sever our connection with the old songs of the past and with the orishas. And so I think different people in this day and age are successfully linking those traditions, and we're a part of it in that way.
So when you think about the future of Latinos, like you, you know, who you've got this mixed background, you've lived in all different places, you practice an Afro-Cuban religion, and that you live in Texas. So when you think of the future, Martin, what does the future look like in terms of Latinos?
Before, I think Latinos can really move forward in the United States to a degree of true success, true happiness. We have a lot of baggage and politics to work out amongst ourselves and to realize that we're bound by a history of colonialism, of slavery, of conquest, but we're united by things that are even more transcendental: language, just different ceremonies, traditions, food, comida, rhythm, that we need to travel and begin to look beyond what's immediately around us in order to appreciate things. Because coming to the United States, people are lumped into these different categories that they didn't even know that they were going to be lumped into coming in, and that's part of this very strange, disorienting immigrant experience. So even though I was born in the States, it's happening to people right all around me. And so collectively, we need to try to make sense of it so that everybody is moving forward. There's not people left behind or people left on the other side of the fence, or that there are fences at all.
Martin Perna is one half of the duo Ocote Soul Sounds. Their new album is The Alchemist Manifesto. It's available from ESL Music. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. Gracias. Production support comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.